The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution, does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. And the anonymity statement says, there may be some who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. If so, we respectfully ask that no Al-Anon, Alateen, or AA speaker or member be identified by full name or picture in published or broadcast report of our meeting. The assurance of anonymity is essential to our efforts to help other families of alcoholics, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us to place principles above personalities. And this meeting is being recorded. The topic of this meeting is Al-Anon Welcomes Men, and its running time is 1.5 hours, so it will be over at 11 a.m. At this time, I would like to introduce the speaker that we're all here to listen to, and I just had the opportunity to meet Bob a few minutes ago, and just in hearing him share with me, I've learned just a few things that I can in 15 minutes. He is from Louisville, Kentucky. And I learned from hearing his story that how God really works in people's lives, that if you're in the right place at the right time and it's God's will, things are just going to happen right for you. He is a seasoned veteran of Al-Anon. He's been in Al-Anon about 28 years. He's been, I believe he said, to 5 internationals and I think 3 Al-Anon international conventions, maybe. So with that, it's a pleasure for me to introduce Bob.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bob Frey. I'm a grateful recovering member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. I'm glad we have a few ladies with us. You could experience how we feel when we go to meetings and we're usually the minority. I thought of the subject that says Al-Anon welcomes men. I would add to that sometimes. But I would like to tell you a few of my adventures in Al-Anon and my experience, strength, and hope that I've accumulated. Coming to an international, it's an anniversary trip for us. This is where I met my wife in 1985 on the way to the international in Montreal. She was sitting next to me on an airplane. And it's God doing for us what we can't do for ourselves, and that's the way the program works. I had just been in the program just a couple years and had been the product of 2 unsuccessful marriages. My affinity was marrying drunks rather than finding them, and then I've been married 3 times, actually, and all 3 of the women were alcoholics. That tells you something about us, how sick we are. We're attracted to, they're exciting, you know. It's like living on the edge with an alcoholic. All you have to do is experience a convention like this, and I just sort of sit back and watch it all happen. And it's quite an experience. But my sponsor had told me to, after I'd gotten into programming, he told me that I should sign up for a workshop and go to the international. It was being held in Montreal a year later from that point. And so I did that and volunteered to be on a panel, and And when the time came, I probably would not have gone, but I would have probably found something else to do, but I had made that commitment. And so the flights that morning were all followed up because of weather, and I ended up on a flight out of Boston on an airline I never heard of before or since. I call it God's airline. And sitting next to me was a young lady, and get talking, you know how anonymous we are. I said, where you going? She said, Montreal. I said, well, I'm going to Montreal. I said, what are you going to Montreal for? She said, convention. I said, well, I'm going to convention too. I said, are you AA or Al-Anon? She says, AA. And I said, well, I'm one of the others. And so we talked some more, and I found out she's going to the same hotels I'm going to. And I said, well, this is right up my alley. I said, well, she had her knee in a walking cast and she couldn't walk very well. And I said, well, I'll help you through customs and get you a wheelchair, and we can get your bags, and then we can share a cab going downtown to our hotel. She was staying in the same hotels I was staying. So we got there, and I dropped my bag off, and I had two double beds in my room, and she was staying in the floor above me in a suite with about 10 women from Denver. And these alcoholic women were all abuzz, you know, they go, boo, they carry on like that. And I said, what's going on here? I'll fix it. And you know how we are. Sometimes I think when we talk about fixing it, when I'm talking at an AA convention, I have an identity crisis, because sometimes I think when I introduce myself, I say, my name is Bob, and because of this program, you know how the alcoholics are, because of the program and good sponsorship and the big book and all that, I haven't had to take a drink in so many days. I feel like I should say my name is Bob, and through this program and good sponsorship and all that, I haven't found it necessary to manage, manipulate, or control since Easter Sunday of 1983. And I think sometimes that gets us all in this trouble, whether we're male or female. We get into trouble because we want to manage, manipulate, and control. And we only feel comfortable when we're doing that. We sometimes are in a bad relationship where things aren't going quite right, and we think that we need to manage something, we need to do something, we need to take care of something. Like in the case of how I met my wife, I was going to fix it because they were short one bed, and they needed, I said, well, I'll share my room. Well, I think I had different ideas than they had. They got very protective and sent through their elderly contingent down to share my room. My wife, we carried on a long-distance relationship for a couple of years. We got to be friends before we became lovers, and that was quite a concept. And today she's got 38 years in the program of AA. And I know, but for the fact that I have a program and she has a program, we would not be married today. But through the graces of these mutual programs. I'd like to tell you something, Bob, since we're talking about men and Al-Anon. My home group is the men's number one group. We have over 125 men on our phone list and average about 60 to 70 men at a meeting. It's a different kind of meeting. I've attended Al-Anon meetings all across the country, and I never have found another meeting like this. About 25% of the men are alcoholic, but when they come in and they say they're alcoholics, we always say, well, you can go upstairs, you want to be an alcoholic. That's where the AAs meet, in the facility we meet on every Tuesday night in Louisville, Kentucky. And if you're ever in town, please come, male or female. We get both. Usually the female decide not to come back, but we welcome them, and it's important. There are no male or female meetings in Al-Anon. Everyone is welcome. But it's quite an experience to experience that. We get a lot of newcomers, a lot of men who come in and they never they've gone to some Al-Anon meetings and they haven't felt comfortable with the women, so I tell them they should attend those meetings anyway. You'll hear a lot of good Al-Anon from the women's, and besides, they hug better. It's an experience. I have some experienced things in that meeting it's a question. You get newcomers coming in, and a man might come in and sit down there, and all of a sudden he starts crying. And that's an experience that he's never felt comfortable with. I found out I could cry, and it was okay. And I didn't have to worry about what the others thought of me. And I think that from a male standpoint, sometimes our society tells us that we've got to be strong and we've got to have all the answers. One of the things that this program has taught me is I don't need to have all of the answers. I've learned that the program is a program of recovery, and if I work those steps and work and do my inventory and do my other work that I need to work, recovery will come to me. And it's essential that that is passed on. In this men's group, we usually break up after the introduction. We usually break up into three or four discussion groups, and lots of times we'll be running a step study group at the same time. We'll study the steps and the traditions, and several of us have been talking about doing one on the concepts, but we're all a little frightened with that. Even after some years in the program, I'm a little frightened of studying the concepts, but they all apply to relationships. And one of the things that I've talked to newcomers as they come in, especially the men, and they may be alcoholics, and I always ask them, I said, why are you coming to our program? Same program as AA, why are you coming? You give some strange answers. They say, well, I got to live with myself. My sponsor tells me to go. But one of the statement that comes through more often than not is they say, do you people handle relationships better? And the secret of relationships, as I have come to understand, is that I have no control over anybody else but Bob. But what I can do is be the best that I can be. I can be the best father, the best husband, the best person that I can be. And if I do that, that cleans up my side of the street. And I have no control over what anybody else does or says. But if I work on myself, just somehow or other, the relationship seems to improve. The other thing that I would like to emphasize is, regardless of whether it's male or female in the program, the working of the steps is important. And I think that one of the things that we talk about is the steps as they are contained in the Big Book. In our traditions, we know that our traditions tell us that we use the 12 steps of AA ourselves. And sometimes we get criticized. I've been criticized by some of the ladies. They said, well, we shouldn't quote from the Big Book. Well, I consider myself a Big Book Al-Anon, and I never really understood the steps until I studied them through the Big Book. When I first came into the program some 28 years ago, There wasn't a lot of literature. We had the ODAD book, but there wasn't a lot of other literature that we have today. We have some great books today, other readers, and the Pathways to Recovery, which I consider an excellent book for studying of the steps of the traditions. But we didn't have those in 25, 30 years ago. And I had the opportunity one time to talk to a little lady from Texas, Eunice O'Neill, and I was appearing on a program with her, and I had the opportunity to talk with her, and we were discussing the early days in Al-Anon. And one of the first conventions that I went to in 1985, Lois Wilson appeared, one of her last appearances before her death, and And she got up there and she said, it was a Sunday morning speaker, and she said, they build this program as a spiritual program. And she says, isn't that what this program is all about? And sometimes we forget this. We forget the position of our higher power in our lives. It doesn't really matter. I had an experience just a week ago where I had I picked up a new sponsee, and he called me and he said, I don't believe in God. What should I do? And my advice to him was, I said, well, if you don't believe in God, you better believe in something, whether it's the program, whether it's a program or a light pole or the group or even me. I said, you can use that. But the important thing is that you have to understand that there's a power greater than yourself out there, and it's not yourself. And your best thinking got you to this program. And it's very difficult for, I'm sure it's the same way with the ladies, but it's very difficult. My experience with the men is it's very, very difficult to admit that you're powerless over anything. Our macho society says we have to have the answers or we're not a good person. One of the things the program has taught me is that I don't have to have all of the answers, and it's okay. And that my life is none of my business. All I have to do is show up on a daily basis and do the next right thing. And if I have a higher power out there, as I told the sponsees, it doesn't really matter. I heard of one fellow use the light pole as a higher power until the dog came along and did his job on the light pole, so the fellow decided he'd better get another concept of a higher power. But where we get into so much difficulty is we think that we have some power. When I first started working with a new man, I say, well, tell me over things over which you have power. Write it down. Make a list of the things over which you have power. It's difficult. It's difficult for the male ego and probably the female too to admit that you're powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable. And the secret of that first step and the second part of the first step says your life's unmanageable. That means it's a permanent condition. You'll never be able to control your life. And that's why I say that's really not important. It's not important that you can control your life, because the second step tells you that there's a power greater than yourself out there that can restore you to sanity. And the sanity and insanity to me is the insanity is the thought that we have power over persons, places, and things, and we don't. And that's not necessary. If you accept the higher power, you will be okay. And basically, that's what my experience has been, is that what we are doing when we come to the program is we don't feel okay for some reason or not. But the program has taught me that I'm going to be okay regardless of what happens in my life. And it's important, it's doubly important that the spiritual components of our program must be discovered. And everyone has their own moment. Lots of times we hear these spiritual experiences that are experienced, we've all heard them discussed in meetings. It's really, I can't say that I've had a burning bush experience or a Pauline light, but I do know that my higher power doesn't make trash, and my higher power is there to help me. All I have to do is reach out and for the asking, the benefits will be there. Again, I want to thank the WSO for inviting me to participate in this meeting this morning, and thank you all for coming, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you all have to add to the mix and to share your experience, strength, and hope. In closing, I'd just like to say, it really doesn't matter how you work your program. Just so you understand that you're not God, and it's as an individual, it's there for you for the asking. As a child, I was taught that God helps those who help themselves, and that's not true. God helps those who ask, and sometimes the most effective way of asking is just say, help. And as men, we have to learn that. We have to learn that it's all right to not have the answers. It's all right to ask for help. It's all right to cry. It's all right to just be yourself. So I wish for you all sorts of good things. I wish for you a good experience on a weekend. And best of all, I wish for you a desire to incorporate this program into your lives so that you can experience all of these goodies out there that I believe God wants us to experience. And if no one has told you today they love you, I'd like to say I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob. Really appreciate everything you said. One of the things I failed to do when I started this meeting was to introduce myself. And my name is Mike McClellan, and I am from Oklahoma City. My home group is the A1 Study Group in Edmond, Oklahoma. We meet on Saturday mornings at 9:30, so anybody that's in Oklahoma City anytime, come on by and see us. It's really a great, great group. I am a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and have been in this program since September of 2005. I would also like to thank the conference committee for allowing me to chair this meeting. I sent in a volunteer request form and just said I would be willing to do whatever I could do, and I was a little surprised when they sent a letter back to me saying they wanted me to chair a meeting. So it's very much an honor to be able to do that. I know when I came into Al-Anon in 2005, I came in with very low self-esteem and a very inflated ego. I thought I had control of everything in my life, even though my life was completely a wreck. And what I learned was, as I thought I was controlling everything in my life, actually everything in my life was controlling me. And I really had little control over anything. And it wasn't until I really got a hold of this program that I knew that I was welcome as part of this fellowship. And that when I went into a meeting, everybody already knew what I had suffered, and everybody already knew what I was feeling. And I didn't have to explain myself or qualify myself every time I went to a meeting. It's interesting, as a man, the first time I went to my Al-Anon men's meeting, I go religiously to that. And I went one time, sat through it, and said I'd never go back to that. Because all those men were judging me. They couldn't possibly understand what I was feeling, and I felt very uncomfortable around those guys. And I talked to my sponsor about that, and he said, you know, maybe you should just try it one more time, except this time realize that they're just like you are, and that they've been through what you are. They're no different than the women in this program. They're just men. Well, men were my problem my whole life. You know, that was where a lot of my pain came from. And it wasn't until I went back to that meeting and sat and listened and saw those guys share their feelings and open themselves up and cry that I realized that I did fit very well into that program. And I can just say, last night at the big meeting during the flag ceremony, I cried. You know, and that's okay. I get to cry today. And no one's going to judge me. And if they do, that's okay. I just need to cry sometimes. So the format of this meeting is, we're going to allow anybody that would care to share to come to the mic and share. We just ask that your sharing be kept to 2 to 3 minutes, if possible, so that the maximum amount of people have the opportunity to share. And I'm not going to blow a horn or anything like that if you go over 2 to 3 minutes, but just keep in mind as you're sharing that there's a lot of people here and probably a lot of people would like to share. So at this point, I'd like to open up the meeting to sharing. And for those that would like to share, if you'd like to just come right over here and line up and just take your turn at the podium, introduce yourself and share just a bit. We'll just get this meeting moving along pretty quickly. Thank you.
I'm Wayne from San Antonio, belong to Happy Destiny, Al-Anon Family Group, and we're in the line of sponsorship of Arbutus O'Neill, and we use the big book in the AA 12 and 12 and Al-Anon literature too, and I don't see any reason to use anything else, but if you want to, that's A-okay with me, but I want to use what I want to use. I went to a men's meeting when I first came in. That was couple of decades ago, and I was a young man then, and it was really important for me to see those guys because they were just like my dad, pissed off, and realized, you know, that my dad really did live with an alcoholic, my mom, and it was a really great experience to be with them and see these guys, because I looked, I don't know, this isn't an Al-Anon issue exactly, but I think a lot of us grow up with no men in our, you know, we go to schools, and the only men who we know are the coaches and the vice principals and the basically the guys who hit people in school. And then you just hang out with buddies your own age doing, you know, so knowing, and all the men in our lives are authority figures, you know, our bosses and so forth. So it was really important in my first few years, especially, to go to men's meetings, to my men's meeting, it was my home group, and be on a more or less equal footing. I say more or less because, you know, they are guys and, you know, they do kind of have a hierarchy. But that's what Mars and Venus says. And but it was also very important for me to realize later that Al-Anons who were married to alcoholics, Al-Anons who were parents of alcoholics, women of all kinds, we all felt the same way. And my sponsor for most of my life and the one who took me, my Al-Anon life, and took me through the AA, the big book in the 12 and 12. I mean, she's a woman, married as many times as you have been, and as long, a nice long third marriage. And, you know, she taught me that, you know, oh yeah, I said, well, I do that because I'm an adult child. And she goes, we all do that. You know, I said, well, I do that because I'm a man. And she said, we all do that. You know, we all feel that way. So now I'm very comfortable. And one of the things I want to say is very, very important to be safe as a man in Al-Anon, because I need those women in that 85% of the meeting. They're going to save my life. And I can't do that if I'm on the make. And I've seen plenty of guys come over. And I think it's so funny because Al-Anon women, I know some people successfully hit on Al-Anon women, but I think they're the last people, because by the time they're at Al-Anon, they've figured out that a man is not the answer. It's just, it's hilarious to see the guys who are just coming in and trying to, oh, yeah, there's a hot one. He's like, you're a day late and a dollar short. You should have gotten them a few years before. So thanks.
Hello, my name is Rogers. I'm a double winner, currently living in Houston, Texas. I grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I thought, well, New Orleans is a very party town, and I thought everybody's family got drunk at night, screamed at each other, and then woke up the next morning like nothing had happened. I was raised in that environment, and that's all I knew. All I knew was alcoholic behavior. I didn't realize there was any other existing behavior, and I didn't realize that the implications it would have on my life as I would try to have relationships. My father passed away when I was 16, and I was left to be raised by an alcoholic mother and my much older brother, who was also alcoholic. All of those people are dead, and I live with their ghosts. They're all in me. And at the urging of my first wife's, I decided, or she got me to go to an Al-Anon meeting in February of 2006. I'm sorry, 2004. And I went to that meeting, and much as many meetings are, I was the only man there. And following that meeting on the Tuesday night, I went to an AA meeting because they had all been talking about me at that Monday night meeting. But anyway, I stayed in the program and kind of moved in and out of it, attending sparse meetings for the last many years. I shortly got divorced after that, and took about a 5-year break and got remarried last year. And that's when the fun started. That's when, in my sober life, I started to live through all of the alcoholics that had raised me, and I could not have a really working relationship with my non-alcoholic wife, who had also been in several marriages before that involved alcoholics. She knew nothing about Al-Anon. And at my urging, she started in the program. A lot of wonderful things started happening to her, and at her urging, I got back into the program. This is a wonderful program. I'm sorry I waited so late for it, but we get where we get. And it allows me to work through all of those things that I have shoved down deep, 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 deep. I'm dealing with things that happened to me, things and events that happened to me 30 and 40 years ago. But I'm dealing with them now, and this program allows me to do that. And it has given me an open communication with my higher power. And I also agree, a lot of times we forget that our higher powers, at least for me, is at the center of all these programs. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rich M. I'm a grateful recovery member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. My home group is the Morristown Men's Group in Morristown, New Jersey, 8 o'clock Tuesday nights. If anybody ever is in that area, please stop in. You're welcome, including the ladies. If someone stops in, just like Bob said, every Al-Anon meeting is for everyone. So, I was also married 3 times, Bob. I was married to an adult child, an active alcoholic, and my current wife I met when she had 5 years of sobriety. We're married for 13 years now. I was raised as a young child with what I used to call the Vince Lombardi. Anybody know Vince Lombardi? Yeah. The theory of life, which is winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. And there was no room for crying especially in front of other men. If you had to cry, you would do it by yourself somewhere. So finding a men's meeting for me was very important. I started off in a mixed meeting. When I met my wife, she had one glaring character defect. She wanted to talk about feelings all the time. And I figured I could work on that. We took a trip to New England. She's from Boston, and I'm from New Jersey. It's about a 6-hour ride. And she said, you want to go up to New England for the weekend? I said, do we have to talk about feelings? And she said, yes, we do. So I had to make a decision, and I decided, well, I could probably steer her away from that, but I was unable to do that. But if it wasn't for the Fellowship of Al-Anon, I'm certain that we would not be married. I'd be moving on to number 4 probably somewhere. Someone said to me one time, you ought to take a look at yourself. You're the only constant in all those relationships. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, everyone. My name is George Lane, and I'm back in New York. We say a two-hatter. Hi. I came into Al-Anon in 1987. I had been in AA 11 years at that time, and I went through a divorce, very painful. And I went into the adult children part because my divorce brought up my childhood in gangbusters. And the men and women in that program really helped me a lot. I really grew, and I got through all the pain of that. And I stayed in Al-Anon for about 10 years. I'm still very active in my other program. And what brings me here today is I have 3 children. My middle daughter is 41, and I've been estranged from her for about 20 years. She married a man who just whisked her out of our lives and would have no contact with her or the 4 grandchildren that came. And this hurt very deeply. And recently this man passed on. And so now my daughter's back in my life with these 4 children who I know from my own journey in life that I desperately needed a male figure in my life to show me how to be a man. I learned how to be a man in the streets of Brooklyn and in the gutter. And when I came into the program, just men and women showed me how to do this thing called life. And so now I find myself contemplating coming back to Al-Anon because I can see I'm headed into the role of being a parent to my grandchildren. And this is new territory for me. I'm not frightened by it, but I'm certainly aware that there's resources in the world, particularly in Al-Anon, that could really help me with this. And so this is my first attempt in verbalizing my thoughts about what I'm planning on doing. So thank you for listening to me. Have a good day, everybody.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. From Galveston Island, Texas, where we live in constant state of crisis. Where I'm at home, because I am a crisis junkie. I am also an Al-Anon. I've been an Al-Anon member since June the 21st, 1984. My wife reminds me that she's always a year ahead of me, because the alcoholic is always ahead of the Al-Anon in their recovery, and she is, predictably. Historically, I think all alcoholics were Al-Anons before they became alcoholic, and that I am historically an adopted child of two Holocaust survivors growing up in a Jewish family. So I knew nothing other than taking care of people in need. And when I was attracted to my wife over 35 years ago and we married, I knew there was a fit there. That alcoholic women, yeah, they attract me. If they have maybe an eating disorder, well, that's a plus. If they have some history of sexual abuse or abusive relationships with men, that's another plus. And so all of a sudden you kind of stack on all these variables, and here I am, ready to show them that not all men are the same. When I first came into Al-Anon, I walked in the rooms, and you know, it started actually a couple of days ago when I got my carrier, and the woman handed it to me and said, "Here's the green one for your wife." And I said, "Well, that's actually mine." And so when I walked over here this morning from the Hilton, and I walked in, I saw green tags. I said, "I'm home. These are my people. This is where I belong." And so I said, "No, I'm actually the Al-Anon in the relationship, and have been for 26 years of three meetings a week, black belt Al-Anon." When I walked in, the women had thin lips, blue hair, sat there and looked at me and said, "Ah, look, we have a guy." I was very atypical, but I knew I was in the right room, because one of the first women that opened up and shared said she was trying to get her fish to swim in the same direction. They were swimming willy-nilly all throughout the aquarium. It was driving her nuts. And then the next woman shared and said that they had moved down to Texas from the Northeast, where in the Northeast they have the floor grates in the heaters, and her husband had passed out on the floor. She left him there all night. He woke up in the morning with a waffle iron branded to his back. And I said, "You know, I have been there. I have been so angry in this relationship that a single car accident into a telephone pole would solve this. But I never knew how to get out of it. I knew this was destiny. I knew this was the attraction of my life." And 35 years later, we have everything to owe to this program. We drove in not from Galveston day before yesterday, but from Asheville, North Carolina. And we brought our 9-month-old dog and our 16-year-old son and a wife. Al-Anon continues to be kind of a way of life. I know that the meetings are each in their own way very different. When I first came in, we organized a men's group, and most of the guys in the group worked at the Johnson Space Center at NASA. And these were very different sort of guys, but we were all the same. We all marveled at how you could get off a cruise ship in the middle of nowhere. The phone would ring, and it would be an alcoholic wife who had located you. So how did you find me? How did you know where I was? But we were always there, and we were always found and ready to fix and rescue. I also find that Al-Anon, for me, is a way of kind of working on detachment. I enjoyed hearing about kids because I have a couple of sons. And I used to say that my oldest son, whose name is A-A-R-O-N, not randomly, didn't drive drunk. He drove drunks. And that he has inherited his father's legacy of alcoholic girlfriends, which at 24 he still seems to perpetuate. I also, as an Al-Anon, respect my wife's sobriety, and I haven't taken a drink in 26 years either. But that was never my issue. Alcohol has never been my issue. It's alcoholics. And it started as a young child caretaking Holocaust survivor parents who carried this survivor's guilt throughout their life because they had survived an event that caused the death of many of their brothers, sisters, and parents. And I, in turn, kind of carry that same survivor's guilt, kind of wondering, what do I need to do to make it right? And going from crisis to crisis to crisis. I appreciate you letting me share. I'm going to go back to my little home group and tell them that I shared at the international convention. They'll be thrilled. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Joe. I'm here for a very spiritual reason. My sponsor is leading the meeting next door, and the fire marshal wouldn't let me stand in the aisle. Sweet. Anyway, I am a man in Al-Anon, and I guess this is where we were supposed to be, Jack. My mind goes to questions such as, apparently we are about 18% of Al-Anon. And I look in the world as we are about 50% of the human beings affected by the disease of alcoholism. So I notice guys come, and I notice guys not stay. And I'm not sure if that isn't one part of people coming to Al-Anon and not staying, men or women. For example, my friend Betty Ann says that people revolve in a meeting at a rate of about 50% a year. So if you go away even from your home group for a year, you won't know half the people next year. And that's certainly been true in my experience. And I don't think they all drop out of Al-Anon, but they rotate around to various meetings or move around the country or whatever. But I think the gentleman who was speaking when I came in was right that it's hard for men to ask for help. We're supposed to not cry and not need help. In my case, I always thought that the crazy women I hooked up to needed my checkbook. And I sponsored a guy who wasn't gay at one time who said to me, "Joe, you can take me shopping." The ladies, the men do not get this, but the women understood exactly where I'm at there. On one particular trip to San Francisco with a lady and her little girl whom I was attempting to help, not including hotel, food, and transportation, I think I must have dropped about $1,000 in shopping for her clothes and baby clothes. You know, you have to help a child. So I got here probably not able to blame anybody else. I think a lot of people look at the type of woman I find attractive and they think she could be trouble. I think I'd better marry her. So I'm a guy in Al-Anon, and I don't know why people don't stay, but let me tell you why I stay. I've been coming on a regular weekly basis for 23 years, and honestly, I looked at the steps and traditions and thought, you know, you've got 12 of those and 12 of those. I'll be out of here in 24 weeks. And when I met people who had 23 years like I do, I thought, retarded. Slow learner. Slow in school. Get out of my way. I'll show you. And what I found was this wonderful program of living. I didn't cry last night, but I felt like it. My sponsor was there. I should have asked his permission to cry. But anyway, the flags were touching last night. And a girlfriend of mine's mom said, I'm a showman. So I love that they didn't march all over the place. I was glad they got it over quickly. And I thought it was a nicely packaged program. It really felt great. It was beautifully done. The committee here generally, I think, has done a great job. It's been a good convention for me. So I stayed because Al-Anon gave me a program of living. And I was in so much pain when I was new, I didn't notice I was the only guy at every meeting. And those ladies didn't remind me, oh, we have a guy. And I certainly wasn't there looking to find the next crazy person to date. I was there because I was in a lot of pain. So I stayed because I was loved and you gave me a program of living. So what I would say, guys, is if you see some other testosterone dude walk into your meeting, grab onto that person and say, you know, maybe you're not ready for sponsorship yet, but call me. Here's a phone list. One of the most macho guys at one of my early meetings. I don't know if you did this, but I didn't want you to get close to me, so I'd hot-foot it out to the parking lot before the Lord's Prayer. I figured, they'll be doing that for 2 minutes. I'll be in my car and out of here. And this guy named Wolfgang, who had a very thick German accent, he was a screenwriter at the Brentwood, California Men's Stag. I feel this hand on my shoulder. And he says, you know, I live near you. Call me. And he handed me a phone list. He understood about hot-footing it to the parking lot. And that really touched me. I stayed because people cared. And as angry as I was, they loved me anyway. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, everybody. I am an alcoholic and a grateful member of Al-Anon. My name is Jim Wilson. No relations to Bob. Bill Wilson, sorry. Bob, thank you. I was in the I Can Fix It For You club for many years, and I found out in doing my fifth step in Al-Anon that I was an enabler of my mother, who was an alcoholic, and my brother, who died not thinking my mother was an alcoholic, because I covered for her. I started cooking at age 8. I'm not a great cook. Thank God they have cans and can openers and microwaves and stuff like that. But I'm really grateful. The gratitude word is the word I keep going back. I've been in AA now 30 years. I went through treatment, and the first meeting I went to, because I read the schedule wrong, you know, that fog that you're in, and it was an Al-Anon meeting. All women, one man, and Mitzi, who's the nurse who I kept up 2 or 3 nights over my 31 days, she said, sit down. So I've been in Al-Anon for a long time before I wanted to. But in 1992, I joined and met a man that we both sponsored each other. And it took me a long time to do my fifth step. Anyone here carry the Blueprint of Progress around in their trunk for about 3 years? I did. But I'm glad I did it because I found out more about myself. And I think I'm in this... not to win it, just to enjoy and to be here. I think this place is so well organized and well put together that you have rain, so it's not as hot as it used to be. I mean, the people in Texas can do anything right. I just want to repeat one thing I heard yesterday. This lady was sober just about the same day I was, which gave her 30 years, and she said, in Texas, that's a newcomer. So thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Leslie. I thought you might need a woman up here. I'm from Oklahoma City, and there's a lot of people here from Oklahoma City as well. And I grew up with a stepdad that was part of my life. And then when him and my mom got divorced and I became a teenager and a little bit out of control, that was the last time that we had any communication. And then I met my real dad when I was 12, and so he lived in another state and was really not part of my life. And then I got married, and I'm still going through a six-year divorce. It's a mess. So I really had nobody, no man in my life that was a good role model. And unfortunately, I don't have any close family. It's actually just me that lives in Oklahoma City. All my family lives in different states. And so when I came into Al-Anon, I was very much alone. You know, I had some girlfriends and things like that. And I did have men that would come in and out of my life, but they were always looking for something from me. And when I got into Al-Anon, there's a big group of about 15 people that are in the group that I'm in, and we do a lot of things outside of the meetings. And these men have taught me that you guys do have feelings, that you do care, that and I didn't even realize that I was learning that until I sat here with you. And I just wanted to thank you. Thank you for coming to the meetings and opening up your hearts and letting us know too who you are and that you're good people. So thank you.
My name is Christopher. I'm a two-time winner, and I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for your love and compassion. I've been to maybe 8 Al-Anon meetings, and I went to the first one. My home group is Evergreen, 6 o'clock in Colorado. If you're ever there, 6 o'clock in Evergreen, Colorado, come on up. It's a good meeting. And they said when I came in, come to 6 meetings before you make a decision. And so I'm still going, which is good. And I'm delighted. I'm delighted to be there. I'm a two-time winner, and my mother, before I got sober, had gone to Al-Anon. My sister, before her daughter got clean, went to Al-Anon. And friends over years said, "You might consider Al-Anon because I'm a caretaker. I didn't have a problem with crying. I'd weep over Lassie shows. You know, not a problem. And that's okay for me." One of the things that I heard that's helped me a lot since I've been coming to Al-Anon meetings is detach with love. And because of what I've heard in the Al-Anon meetings and what I've been able to apply in my own life, you see, my wife's an alcoholic. She's sober. All my friends, pretty much, are alcoholics, sober alcoholics. And guess what? I got to live with myself. I'm still a sober alcoholic, so I have lots of opportunity to practice Al-Anon. A very good friend of ours, and my wife's AA sponsor, and my friend Suzanne was coming to the conference, and she'd suggested for a while that I go to Al-Anon. And my wife started going to Al-Anon a while ago. Go figure. She said it was for the kids. Didn't mention me. And so Suzanne had suggested yet again you might go. Anyway, she was going to be at this conference for AA and for Al-Anon. Her husband got a herniated disc, so she didn't go. So I have brought Flat Suzanne, and so Flat Suzanne is now at the International Convention with us. And I have her to thank for my Al-Anon serenity. And the last thing that I'll say is that I caretook my mother for many, many years. Alcoholic or not, she's not always quite right. And a year ago, her and I parted ways not well and not of my own doing. And recently, she had been on basically a 35-day hunger strike. She was determined that she was going to go. And I went to support my aunt. Out of love, my aunt was just going nuts. And maybe that's old caretaker behavior. I don't know, but it felt right. And that's what I went to do. And I realized before I'd left, my mother had changed her mind. So after about 36 days of not eating, she started eating again. We got her in the hospital and she's on her way. What happened is my mother didn't change during that visit, but I became more at peace with Christopher and more at peace with myself and with my place in the world. My mother didn't change, so there was a change within me, and I believe that I have Al-Anon and my Alcoholics Anonymous program to thank for that. So again, thanks for your love and compassion.
Hi, my name is Bruce, and I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. Hi, Bruce. And I'm really happy to be here today. I didn't think I'd be speaking at an Al-Anon meeting, but and I just realized my wife accuses me of being another Inspector Clouseau. I didn't realize that the green was Al-Anon and the blue was AA. Now I know what to look for. But not now, Cato. Is that what that one? I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mom was the alcoholic. I used to sneak up to her bedroom and go into her lingerie drawer and find half pints of lemon-flavored gin, and I would break them in her sink in her bathroom very quietly and sneakily, and I thought in some way I was, you know, helping her or teaching her a lesson, and you know, I didn't realize at the time really what I was doing. I just, you know, I knew that my mother was in trouble, and I had always thought that, you know, watching her slowly die, that if you were an alcoholic, you were going to die ultimately a horrible death. And thankfully, through Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out that's not necessarily the case. But at any rate, I grew up with my mom, and I always had a special connection with her, not knowing that we were birds of a feather. And she went on and kept on drinking and died one Thanksgiving morning, hemorrhaging from her esophagus. And I was away. I came home, and, you know, there's blood, you know, all over her bedroom where she liked to hide. And at any rate, I was still drinking at the time. To try to help my mom in some kind of strange way, I went into a Catholic seminary for six years to try to, I guess, in some way, you know, pray her back to health. And, of course, that didn't work. And I left and started on my own journey in alcoholism. And, you know, thankfully, after back in 1982, I found the rooms of AA. And interestingly enough, about 15 years after I came into AA, my wife came into the fellowship of AA, and she had been in Al-Anon for a long time. And then our son came into the fellowship about 17 years ago. He's studying for he has come to many of these international conventions, but this next couple of weeks he's studying for the bar exam out in San Diego, trying to take it for the third time, and I'm praying that he's going to make it this time. But at any rate, how I got into Al-Anon, you know, I knew that, and also our daughter came into the program. She met a guy at the last international convention in Toronto. They got married. I think she got pregnant while at the international convention, and now they have two little grandchildren. And she's kind of really the focus of my Al-Anon concerns today, in that she and her husband stopped coming to the fellowship. They stayed sober, but we've had a very difficult time, you know, communicating and relating to them. And I've gone to a number of Al-Anon meetings, but I had a hard time connecting, and I was out in Denver, Colorado on business, and it was a snowstorm last October, and snow was up to my waist, and met an insurance broker that I had done business with many years, and we had a lot of free time and started to talk, and lo and behold, I found out that he had been in Al-Anon many years, and I shared with him that I had been in AA, and I had tried Al-Anon but had a difficulty connecting. And this fellow Steve had suggested to me at that time that I should try an all-men's meeting of Al-Anon, that maybe I would be able to relate better. And to this day, I live out in Long Island back in New York, and there's a meeting in Hicksville, not too many towns away from us, an all-men's meeting. And I, unfortunately, since last October, I haven't gotten to that meeting, but I saw on the meeting list this meeting today, dealing with men in Al-Anon, and so I thought I would come and try to learn a little bit more, and now I'm more convinced than ever that I should really commit myself to this wonderful fellowship, which is, you know, has another aspect of sobriety and sanity that I haven't been able to totally grasp in AA, and I know that there's something here for me that that I need to learn about. So I'm very grateful to be here today. Thank you.
Good morning. My name's Rich.
Hey, Rich.
See, I didn't have to announce myself. When I checked in, my wife looked at me and she goes, "You know, half this should be green." If you went to the family disease workshop, you probably met my wife. Her name is Tina. She was one of the people that were speaking at it. And she's one of those Al-Anons that she actually came into the program before I got sober. And it was Al-Anon that saved my life. And let me tell you how it saved my life. They taught her not to take responsibility for my drinking. One morning I woke up and I was suffering from one of those incredibly horrible hangovers, you know, the kind that just want to just, your brains just want to explode out of your head. And she put breakfast in front of me. And the children were running around and they're just kind of making all kinds of noise. And she said, "Daddy's not feeling very well this morning. Why don't you all go outside and play? Maybe he can do something for you a little later." And I thought, what the hell? Where's the screaming? Where's the yelling? And I said that to her. I said, "Where's the screaming? Where's the yelling? What's going on?" And she looked at me and she goes, "You know, I'm no longer responsible for your drinking." And it was like a light bulb went into my head. And then what happened was is that I came to the realization that, you know what, the only one I had to blame was myself. I could no longer blame her or the children or anybody else. That next day, I went to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was November 16th, 1983. My wife takes joy in being in the program longer than me, by the way. 2 years ago, this weekend, I was in Pittsburgh at the Al-Anon convention, and I had gone, and I was drugged there, kicking and screaming, by the way. I kind of knew I belonged in Al-Anon, but I just, you know, that was, no. So I went to Pittsburgh with my wife to the Al-Anon convention, and I went to this one particular workshop, and there was this young man who was speaking, and he pissed me off. Because he made some sort of derogatory remark about alcoholics. Now, if you've ever been in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, sometimes there's some alcoholics out there that make derogatory remarks about Al-Anon. In fact, there was one made last night, if you didn't catch it. You know, at the big meeting, there was one made. So he made that derogatory remark, and I got kind of pissed off about it, and I got to thinking about, you know, how it affected me and why it did. And to this day, I couldn't tell you what the young man said that upset me so badly. But what I can tell you is this, is that it was one of those same things my father told me when I was a young kid. And my father was and died an alcoholic. Both of my fathers, by the way. So I realized right then and there from Pittsburgh that I needed to be in an Al-Anon program. My home group, I've been in Al-Anon ever since. And my home group, I go faithfully once a week. It's a 7 o'clock bring your own damn coffee meeting, is what it's called. I thought that was a great name for it. I thought, this is cool. I've actually been a secretary of the meeting. I've been there. I've been going for 2 years now, solid. This particular meeting I love because what we do is we break it up throughout the month. We study the step two times in the month. We study the traditions and we study the concept. And it's a writing meeting, and it's just been really, really, really powerful for me. It's one of those things. So in essence, if you're sitting on the edge or you're sitting on the bubble going, you know, as a man going, you know, should I go there? Oh, by the way, I am the only man in this meeting. And I don't stop going just because I'm the only man. I go because I need to be there. I have been affected by this disease, not only in the fact that I consumed it, but also how I am affected by how people affect me. People piss me off. And I have a serious control issue. Hey, last night, I don't know if you got caught in it, but there was this traffic jam kind of thing that we had to go through last night, right? And this one woman who was obviously suffering from some extreme anxiety, she was just really freaking out. And she said, we all need to get together and kind of push. And I looked down and I hit my wife like that and I went, look, it's green. And I relate. this is actually my first AA International that I've ever gone to. One thing I've already noticed is that from the Pittsburgh one to this one, the Al-Anons are a little bit more organized. They don't have as many, but I'll tell you what, you knew where you were going and what you were doing. It was really cool to go to. So if you've never gone to an Al-Anon International, I highly recommend you go do it, because for me it was very powerful, very moving. And I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Doug, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I want to thank our secretary for your service and our chairperson today. I really appreciate it. Some great shares. You know, I have so many thoughts buzzing through my head as I listen to people talk. It brings up so many memories and thoughts of my journey in my program. And, I came in to Al-Anon really confused. I grew up in a family where I had, as I came to understand later, I could actually put a term to it. I had the mother of all codependents as a mom, and I had a rageaholic dad who never drank, who was violent, always angry, and controlled the whole family. And I just, if somebody asked me, what's your family like? I said, well, my dad's an asshole. I don't know what else to call him. I was addicted to adrenaline at a young age because of that. And so I did a lot of daredevil crap. And, I tell stories of 15 and a half years old. My parents, I talked them into getting me the biggest motorcycle that Honda made at the time. And I used to ride down the street racing my friends at 100 miles an hour in shorts and a tank top with no helmet, with holding onto the handlebars with one hand. And, boy, I felt like I was alive when I did that kind of stuff. And what it was it felt familiar to me, as I came to understand later. So I crawled into the doors of Al-Anon in 1990, going through a divorce with two little kids, one baby, one 11-month-old baby, and a 4-year-old son. And my wife, I had married a adult child of an alcoholic who drank himself to death and beat his family and terrorized his children. And that was my kind of lady. And we had two little kids, and she started beating on my son at 4 years old. And I filed for divorce and left and went to therapy and started vomiting all over my therapist about my ills. And she said, you ought to try Al-Anon. And I said, why? I have no alcohol in my family. She said, well, it's only $1 an hour. I said, oh, okay. I can afford two or three of those a week, So So I came to Al-Anon, and you know, I came to the first meeting I came to was actually an ACA meeting, ACOA meeting, and it was a tape study. And they had these authors on tape. And I listened to somebody talk, and he was a counselor from New York City, and he was talking about the cornerstone of the family, of the alcoholic family system. And he said it was rigidity, denial, isolation, and silence. And I listened to him talk, and I thought, that's how I grew up. I used to remember my dad saying, if you tell anybody in this neighborhood about this family, I'm going to beat your ass. And so we just didn't. We were terrified of the man. So I came to understand a little bit about why I chose the person I chose. I remember at one time I was 27 years old. I moved up to the San Francisco Bay Area, which is where I'm from now, from Los Angeles. I got a job, got away from that family. I'd been away from them for a while, but actually separated, you know, physically, detached with distance, right? And I got a job, got my first professional job. I bought a house at 27. I had a new car. I had new furniture. I had new clothes. But, you know, something was missing. There was no excitement. So I went out and found myself an adult child of an alcoholic family member and got married. And everything started to feel familiar because I was in crisis. I was always on the edge. One of our groups, not my home group, but we have a men's group. And it's probably the best attended group in our district. But we have three cities in our district, probably 200,000 people. We have one men's group, 25 to 30 men every week are there. That's the biggest attended meeting. I watch men come in there. I watch men sit in the back. They sit, take up seats. They don't talk a lot. They're looking for, I can tell, they're looking to figure it out. that hasn't been my experience, that's worked very well for me to figure it out. I had to let go. I've thankfully had some years when my kids started to go through their issues, predictably. I got a 21-year-old daughter who's just got out of jail a week ago for served 9 days for her second DUI. She doesn't want help. She doesn't want to attend AA. And, you know, my acronym for her is MMOFB, Mind My Own Business. When I can do that and stay out of her life, she'll find solutions to her problems in life because I don't have those solutions, and I know I only have solutions for me today. So, thanks.
I'm a grateful Al-Anon. My name is Jack from Los Angeles. Good morning, everybody. Bringing greetings from my home group, which is La Cañada, California, 7 o'clock, Let's Rock Men's Al-Anon group. We have, on a regular basis, between 110 and 135 men at a men's Stag Al-Anon meeting. And upstairs you'll find child care, because we've got single men that need to be able to get to a meeting. They bring their children to that meeting. I'm proud to be a member of that group. A lot of those guys, that meeting was smaller this Thursday because about half that meeting is here, wandering around the convention, a lot of guys. And I'm a green badge. I'm a backwards couple. When I first went to conferences with my wife, they assumed I was the alcoholic and she was the long-suffering Al-Anon. You'd take one look at us and figure that was the case, but I am only a green badge. And I think it's very interesting. The alcoholics are the blue badge and we're the green badge. And I sponsor a lot of people and some of them are here and single and they went to the 13-step dance on Thursday night and we're trying to figure out how we should direct our energies and we were trying to decide which badges might be the safer or the sicker ones. And we pretty much agree the green badges are the sickest because I don't know about you, but I've got a terrific drunkalogue that didn't involve any alcohol that I consumed personally. And then it occurred to all of us that the most dangerous badges were the yellow badges because they don't think there's anything wrong with them and they're here with us. And we've heard from a lot of double winners today. And thank you, Bob, for your share very much. I've actually been to Louisville not long ago there's a lot of talk from people who are in both programs. I congratulate you on coming to the graduate program for Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we call it in my group. The 135 guys, you'll find about 40 or more of those guys are also in AA. But if you come to our meeting and sit through the meeting and hear everybody share, I defy you to pick out who they were at the end of the meeting because they don't share as an alcoholic. They don't even really identify for the most part. Because the first thing we tell them when they come through the door is that their credits don't transfer. that I don't know about you, but I go to a lot of AA meetings so I can learn about a disease that I don't have from people who have it. And one of the interesting phenomenon that I've seen there is people, and it happens all the time, people come in new and they are an ANDA. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I'm an alcoholic ANDA, and they add all these things on. And what I find to be almost universally true is that the longer they're there, the ANDAs start to fall off. And I think that that's important, because if I'm an Al-Anon ANDA man or an Al-Anon ANDA anything else, I can find the source for my experience, strength, and hope to those people who are also the same ANDA as me. And as those fall off and I start to identify with everybody in the room, I open myself up to the possibility of more information coming from more resources. And I sponsor a lot of people at this convention, a lot of people out in the world, and a bunch of them wandering around here. And when they go to meetings, you won't be able to tell who any of them are, because we talk about that. What happens for me is that I sponsor these guys who are also in AA. And I only have one rule for sponsorship, which is that if you're in another program, you need to have a home group and a sponsor over there. And it has nothing to do with you, it's so that I don't get sick. Because I'll get sick trying to fix you. If you bring me your disease, my disease will recognize that and I will try and fix you. And what I find to be very interesting about that is that we begin to work in consort, that they'll call their AA sponsor and he'll say, you need to call Jack about that. That's a relationship thing. You need to talk to Jack about that. And I'm very privileged. The last thing is that I'm equally at home in a men's meeting as I am in a women's meeting. When I went to my first Al-Anon meetings, Joe, by the way, is a regular at some of the meetings that I go to, and his sponsor next door. Joe, if your resentment wasn't big enough, they've been doing a lot of laughing and clapping over there, and they won't let us in. Trying to help out. But I got a sponsor who was a woman, because it's all there was. I had a guy sponsor for a while. He was the only one I kind of saw around. He didn't have any time, and he didn't have any experience with the steps. I needed help. I was in a lot of trouble. And I asked a very kind woman to sponsor me, and she didn't tell me men don't sponsor men and women don't sponsor women. She understood that we're here with the same problem and the same solution. And she said these words to me. She said, I would be honored to sponsor you. And I'm so grateful for that. And she said that, you know, I'm the only guy in a meeting with 40 or 50 women, and it was pretty regular. And I thought it was being anonymous and hiding out in there. She said that if you stay here and you're in that chair every week, guys are going to come and they're going to stay. And if you come to those meetings in Southern California now, virtually, I'm still going to the same meetings I was going to 20 years ago. You'll find that a third to a half of that room are guys. She was right. They were going to come and they're going to stay. The other thing is, she put a burden on me. She said, if they come and they stay, they're going to ask you to sponsor them, and you better get busy. And she put me to work doing the steps. I'm really grateful that we don't discriminate in Al-Anon. That men's meeting I talked about, it became an issue a few years ago. There was a lot of talk about Al-Ateens having trouble transitioning. So we were the first in Los Angeles to have a listing put in our directory in L.A. that said, we welcome young people. We don't care how old you are. If you're in Al-Anon, whether you're 12 or 200, come and join us. And we don't treat them any different. And I'm honored to be a member of a bunch of groups that don't discriminate by gender or by age or by anything else. If you go to AA and you don't want to drink, they let you in the drawer. They don't care what you look like. If you come to the meetings I come to, we don't care what you look like or where you came from. If your life has been affected by somebody else's drinking or sobriety, please come and join us. We might have some information for you. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Tom, and I wasn't going to speak, but if I don't open my mouth, my higher power can't use me as a conduit, so I don't know what's going to come out. But I'd like to say I was born to be a codependent. When I was in grammar school, there was this mythical person that I don't know what it is, but my teachers would call me Mrs. Grundy, because I was always more interested in what other people were doing than what I was assigned to do. And that has, you know, affected me throughout my life. And alcoholism is a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. When I did finally get to Al-Anon, I got the pamphlet, is the green pamphlet with 20 questions that says, were you raised in an alcoholic home? And I can answer those, 18 of those in the positive. But I can't tell you if my parents were alcoholic. I do know that they drank. And for whatever reason, I caught the family disease of alcoholism. And I did marry an alcoholic. I didn't know it at the time. And I identified with the other speaker saying they were in three marriages, because I've been in three different marriages, all to the same woman. And I've been married 42 years. And there have been at least three different phases, pre-alcoholic drinking, alcoholic drinking, and then sobriety. And my wife's been sober for almost 15 years. I am ahead of her, so I like to hold that over her, too. I came to Al-Anon before she got into AA, and I had really nothing to do with her getting into AA, but I did get out of the way. I was in the way and an enabler. I think the only thing that really separates me as a male in this family disease is that is my assumptions and expectations. My assumption was, well, I'm supposed to take care of this because I'm the husband, and I'm supposed to fix things. I am a fixer kind of guy. I'm an engineer, and I do fix things. I like to fix things, but I couldn't fix my wife, and I couldn't fix alcoholism. I tried. I did all the classic things, you know, finding bottles, and I'd throw out the liquor. But that wasn't satisfying enough to me because she'd just go buy more. And so I would end up dumping the liquor and then leaving the bottle on the counter so she could make sure that I knew that she was had it. And it didn't do any good either. But I did. There is miracles in Al-Anon. My wife finally did get recovery. I did reach the point that I told her that I couldn't really withstand her driving drunk anymore, that I didn't want to be emotionally, physically, or financially responsible if she killed someone, for instance. And I said I had talked to a lawyer, and the only way he said I could protect myself was dissolution of marriage. And she said, well, don't do that. I said, well, it's kind of up to you. Well, God works in mysterious ways. The next day, she got her second DUI, and started her recovery program. She was assigned by the court to a 90-day rehab, and that worked. And didn't have anything to do with me. God was in charge. And part of the miracles are, we lived in Livermore, California, San Francisco Bay Area for 30 years. And one of the things we started doing in sobriety was going on vacation in Hawaii. And I really fell in love with Maui. And we moved there after I retired 3.5 years ago. And so now I get to live in paradise, and I think that's really a miracle. I get to live exactly where I want to live. And now I'm the district rep of Al-Anon for Maui. So if you're ever in Maui, my home group is called E Komo Mai, Thursday night. It means welcome. And we don't have a men's group, but we have some pretty strong Al-Anon. So hope I can see you there. Thanks.
Hi, my name's David. I'm from Bergen County, New Jersey. And I really don't like speaking, and wasn't planning on speaking, but at the same time, I've gotten so much out of what everybody said, I sort of feel like I would be amiss if I didn't at least say something. Maybe somebody will get something out of it. I didn't even know there was such things as men's groups, actually. It's the Bergen County's big. We have a lot of Al-Anon meetings. I go to a couple of them fairly regularly now, and have been going now for about 5 years, but I don't think we have a men's meeting, although there are men at all of them, and actually it's not really an issue for me at this time, but I wanted to come today to hear what I would hear, and it's been really great. The one thing that I just want to mention also is that I'm also Children of Holocaust survivors, so the one gentleman who mentioned that, it's I think that my parents were not alcoholic, but a lot of the different issues seem to arise out of me growing up. There was this tremendous sense of having to take care of things. There's a tremendous loyalty my parents had towards each other, even though they seemed to hate each other a lot of the time. So I can relate to a lot of the alcoholic behavior that people talk about, the screaming and yelling and then acting like everything is perfectly fine at, you know, almost immediately afterwards and thinking, you know, when was the problem resolved? What, you know, was there even an attempt to resolve the problem? It was all stuff that, you know, growing up, then when I'm married almost 27 years and married an alcoholic that I had no idea she was drinking. And that's why I'm actually a little jealous of alcoholics. So a lot of people say they don't, you know, different things. The alcoholics almost all have this time when they get this tremendous sense of powerfulness and wonderfulness from alcohol. I never got that. So my wife was apparently having that. I didn't even know about it, and I never got to. And, you know, all I saw was after, you know, I knew that she had this tremendous unpredictability. Even when we were dating, we'd make an appointment to meet somewhere, and she would just never show up. And I think there was something in the way my parents acted, and I think I must have somehow been attracted to that. Anyway, when I first found out she was drinking, which was, and it was a real problem right away when that happened, I went to Al-Anon right away, just figuring, you know, I had heard of it. I figured, you know, maybe they would help me. I didn't know what else to do. But I did go, actually, for a fairly short amount of time. We were in Chicago at the time. My wife, after a couple of months, went into rehab. And then when we moved out of Chicago, I basically stopped going to Al-Anon. Things seemed to be okay. And then she was going, I don't want to go through the whole thing, but she was going to a program, you know, all in, you know, basically most the whole time I was, you know, just living my life, working, having our kids, and we were going along okay. As she progressed in her program, and then I don't know if it's lucky or unlucky, I had one son who basically was born to be an addict of some kind. And told us he was going to be an alcoholic when he was like 9 years old. As he got to be a teenager, having problems in school, and things were just really out of control with him, I tried everything I could to fix him. You know, I really had this, you know, control, fixing, manipulating ideas. So then when I, anyway, through his problems, sending to boarding school. Then we ended up in therapy. We ended up in a couples group. And then in the couples group, you had to introduce yourself. And I said, oh, I'm David from Al-Anon. My wife goes, you don't go to Al-Anon. So, there, you know, after people would come up to me, say, you know, they would introduce me, and or they would introduce themselves and offer to take me to an Al-Anon meeting. Anyway, this is about 5 years ago, started going, and been going to Al-Anon ever since. And it really changed our lives. Changed my life. And changed basically the life of everybody that I interact with, I think, because I'm just a completely different person. Sometimes people ask me why I'm, you know, I seem calm, I don't seem to get out of control. And I would ask them sometimes, well, do you happen to know any alcoholics? Or, you know, you have a relative that's an alcoholic because, you know, there's a program that can help you. Anyway, that's basically all I have to say. Thank you very much.
I'd like to really thank everybody that came today, and this was really a great meeting, and I appreciate the things everybody shared. I'd like to also thank all the my friends and family that came to this meeting this morning to support me. And I'll just leave you with this. A lot of people have asked me in and out of the program. I go to about 7 or 9 meetings a week, and a lot of people have asked me, why do you go to so many meetings? You don't live with alcoholism anymore. And my answer to that is very simple. I'm a better person when I do. I'm a better family member and a better friend to everybody around me. So, again, I'm really grateful to be here and grateful for everybody that came. And I would like to close this meeting by attempting to make some sort of a hand-holding thing. I'm not going to say a circle. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer.